Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 180.
This week on the podcast, 195 countries are willing to take a chance on believing in climate change, which is a far better percentage than our own Congress.
And Ted Cruz is the new second place frontrunner in the GOP primary, because, well, he's actually in first place somewhere.
Trump decides we should ban all Muslims, except the rich and important kind, so don't worry, the bin Ladens can still come.
And just about everybody is threatening to leave the GOP and run independently over a contested convention that hasn't even happened yet.
The rent is still too damn high, but Jimmy McMillan is retiring, so now nobody's working on it.
And America is losing on several fronts, most notably the soda, chicken wing, and hippo-related ones.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yes.
What a week, guys.
Big week.
Big week. Also, Brent, as he was just saying, is dressed up for the podcast, so it's a big week in that sense as
Usually
well.
Usually I look like a hobo.
Right, but...
And not hobo chic, actual hobo.
He's in his Christmas church clothes.
Yes,
so Brent is doing this podcast in slacks.
You may recognize this shirt as
the shirt
that I wore to my Christmas concert yesterday.
I sure do recognize that shirt. It was hard to recognize without the oddly similar but also clashing plaid scarf they made you wear, but I somehow was able to identify that the shirt that you purchased at Target yesterday morning is in fact the shirt you've been wearing
since.
It's
like 48 hours.
Yeah, it's a whole weekend shirt.
Yeah.
It turned out not just a concert shirt after all.
Nope.
In any case, the big news of this week was announced yesterday,
which
is that those Paris climate talks produced a deal.
It's shocking.
Shocking.
It was late, of course.
But only by day.
Only by
That's
a day.
That's not... The American style of doing things late is to push off the deadline forever and ever until you never have a deal because you've never made a firm deadline.
Or the deal would have been to set another meeting time.
That's a classic U.S. deal strategy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes. We'll deal
with
this in March.
We do have another meeting time. It's in 5 years because we actually did a deal.
We did a deal where we insisted on meeting again after having plans to do something before that meeting. So that is a new adventure that we're on, and I'm curious to see where it goes.
Ditto.
In any case, 195 countries signed on. So that's...
It's huge.
I mean, as we said in the rundown, that's a better batting average than our Congress.
Yeah.
And according... The AP sort of spun it as a sort of a pledge to stop emitting greenhouse gases. However... The actual participants in the deal refused to actually say that they were going to aim to stop emitting greenhouse gases by the end of this 5 years or by the end of a certain era. So we're not really sure what the deal means in a sort of rulemaking sense, other than that we're all going to check in again in 5 years.
Yeah.
So that's fun. In any case, the New York Times did a pretty good rundown of what's in the deal. So we're going to take you through some of the points.
Yes.
With their help, because... It's also a long deal.
Yeah. They're trying to cut off the amount that the temperature goes up.
Right. So we've already... The sort of average temperature has already increased by 1 degree.
Yes.
And so they are trying to prevent it from going up to 2 degrees. This deal was pretty notable because instead of just vaguely saying they want to keep it under 2 degrees, which they started to say in the deal, they actually set a specific target, which is 1.5 degrees.
Yeah.
They want to try to stay at that or lower.
Right. And the main reason for this, obviously, is, I mean, this is just, that's what causes global warming, is the temperatures, obviously. But there's specifically, it's sort of, you know, related to where they got that number was the whole Greenland ice sheet and the West Antarctic ice sheet will melt. And
they're sort of guessing at what the trigger point will be for that.
The trigger point is probably either 1.5 or maybe 2 degrees.
Yeah.
So that was sort of where
they came
up with that number. We're trying to not have those things happen.
Right, because that's just a new level of catastrophe that nobody's interested in.
Yeah.
It also specifically notes the degree to which forests really help offset some of these climate issues that we're facing. And so it encourages countries to save their existing forests and to not... You know, to curb clear cutting measures and things like that have been sort of reducing the number of trees worldwide. And then also, it sort of indicates that there will be some there'll be some money available to help people sort of do this.
I like this. You don't hear much about saving the forest these days.
No,
do you?
I know. That's sort of it's an outdated.
It really took me back to like elementary school.
Takes you back to Earth Day in elementary school.
It does.
Where you sing a song
about
saving the forest.
Yeah, I feel good about this.
I feel good too.
Yeah, some nostalgia here.
It's been a while. Well, and specifically, they also talk about planting new forests as a kind of offset.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk a little bit about how some of that wording is not the greatest. But it is also good to note that they're even encouraging people to create new forests,
yes.
which is a nice thing. Mm-hmm. In terms of how this is all going to be paid for, there was a major sticking point in this yes. passage. This is the part of the agreement that indicates that developing nations either should or can
yes.
help the that the rich nations should help the developing nations pay
yes.
to do some of these things that they're setting out.
Because
these are expensive things to undertake.
Right.
Changing your whole power grid and your economy is not so right. simple.
And especially for countries that are developing, that are large countries. You know, a lot of people were talking about India being the sort of like real sticklers here on a lot of this.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've got a trillion people living there.
Exactly.
And they are
That's
still,
almost exactly correct.
And they're still developing, and they can't
right.
necessarily
they
just use, you know, wind power to do it. So
well, exactly.
It's sort of
and
like
they, unlike a country like China, which is also sort of developing and has a billion people, are not a planned economy. So they have,
right.
you know, for them to take undertake these measures is a much bigger project than
right.
it is in a place
so
where there's a
help,
central.
Obviously.
So they want some help. So in this passage, the word should versus shall became a major sticking point.
Yes.
Because the developed countries didn't want to be legally responsible for paying for some of these costs that that the developing nations are going to be undertaking. The developed nations wanted to maybe feel like they could help. They
right.
wanted to feel like it was okay to help instead
yeah.
of that they were legally bound to help. So that was one, I mean, that word almost unraveled the entire thing.
Yeah.
But it also is something that maybe weakens the deal pretty significantly because
right.
developed nations are the ones with the agency here.
Yes.
And so that, but at the same time, you know, developed nations are saying that the money that this sort of promises is not really going
to
be enough,
enough
but it at least sort of
cover.
Starts the process of developed nations paying towards some of this stuff in
yes.
developing nations, which is important.
Right.
And then the U.S. also was real, they were real sticklers on transparency.
Yeah.
They wanted to make sure there was a way to keep up with these, to keep up with countries as they enact these measures. And
right.
so they demanded that there be a system through which countries are evaluated to make sure that they are reducing carbon emissions.
Right.
And is possibly related to the fact that we don't trust China or Russia
right.
even a little bit.
And those are two of the countries here that you're going to need to trust in this because
right,
they're big.
They're big. They're and you know, in Russia's case, they're big oil countries.
Oil countries.
China's a big
right,
manufacturing
exactly.
country.
Yeah.
They're polluting up a storm.
Yeah.
You know, so
we have to be able to know that they're at least trying to do these things.
Yeah.
yeah.
And I mean, oddly, they were pretty easy on this deal. They were not difficult to work with. It, you know, it was countries like India that had
right.
a lot to lose economically from this transition
right.
that were much harder. The U.S. and China were kind of handling
yeah.
it. They were
well,
kind of
I
on
think,
the same page.
I mean, the Chinese currently right now are, I mean, first well, off, they're no fools over there. And
no,
also, they
Beijing,
can't breathe.
Right. Beijing
breathe
is
there.
Like a city you can't go outside in right
yeah.
now. So
they
climate
just,
change
I think,
is
I think
quite
just
important
this week,
to them.
Or last week, I saw an article about how they've reached their highest level
yeah.
like of, I mean, you can't even literally see in front of your face
no,
in
it's,
Beijing
it's
right
like
now.
It's like a
because,
smog fog.
So it's, I'm glad they're on the same
yeah,
page
no,
with us.
They
should be.
They
but,
had, quality of life wise, they are facing the biggest threat as
yeah.
of the big nations
yes.
from these issues.
Yeah.
From these, you know, carbon emissions issues and other things that are related to global warming. So
right.
like it is sort of important that they get this stuff under control there as well.
It's interesting that Russia seemed to be there with us because
they lose
I mean,
a lot.
They lose a lot just because
they're
are
big oil country.
They're an oil country. And so, you know, the more of that we keep in the ground,
yeah.
the less they can sell and the less rich they are. But
exactly.
I'm,
Saudi
again,
Arabia,
I'm too heartened by.
Thrilled that they're participating.
Yeah.
Perhaps they're willing to participate because we stopped short of actually declaring that we're going to reach greenhouse gas emissions neutrality.
Yeah.
It basically, so advocates say that the way that the passage is worded on greenhouse gas emissions will send a message to the fossil fuel industry that most of what has been unexcavated of their supplies has to stay in the ground. However, it doesn't actually say that, and what it actually suggests is that these companies can continue to burn what they're, you know, burn these fuels that cause greenhouse gas emissions as long as they create greenhouse sinks, which are things like new forests that kind of offset. It's sort of like the larger version of carbon offsets.
Yeah.
Remember when we were all buying
yes.
those?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't buying those because
right.
it seemed like you were just spending money on nothing and that you could just get a more efficient car. But
right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But so the previous version did call for neutrality. That is something that is a weakened element of this new version. But at least we all agreed on it.
Yeah.
We got there. And then one thing that is pretty groundbreaking here is this is the first time that in an international agreement about the environment, they refer to loss and damage, specifically as it relates to developing nations feeling the effects of climate change and those creating loss and damage, as you see in all of these floods in, you know, in developing nations, earthquakes, well, things like that.
A lot of island countries,
too. A lot of island nations who are about to drown.
Who are seeing their coastlines, you know, disappear. And
So this is the first time that we sort of acknowledge that they are facing a specific kind of threat and that they are suffering a worse fate than those of us who live in middle America, when it comes to some of these threats. And so it does, it talks about recognizing and trying to minimize those effects and also kind of figuring out how we can acknowledge and deal with those threats, which is nice because maybe at one point, maybe at some point we can actually like pay to help deal with some of those threats. Who knows? But also they all, as we said, have to come back every 5 years and they have to, in 5 years, come up with new reduction targets. So it's an ongoing process that is, as we said, it's a meeting in 5 years, but it's a meeting in 5 years with a plan.
Well, and that's better than the 10 years, which is what India was pushing for.
India was pushing for 10-year cycles.
India wanted 10 years to just do whatever the fuck they wanted. And then come back.
And then come back.
And be like, we're not a developing country any longer.
So now
we ruined everything, but it's been 10 years. So we're here to discuss everything now. So they have to come back in 5 years. So that's good.
Something. That's a good thing. But so in any case, as we said, some strange bedfellows emerged during this process. The U.S. and China were sort of on the same page here. A lot of people think that this pact will sort of move the balance of power further away from the developing world where, you know, we have, there's sort of like, there's been a lot of kind of like excitement about economic development in the developing world because it's cheap to manufacture there and we don't manufacture anything here anymore. But this is going to be a big boost to renewable energy technologies. The U.S. and Japan are the big leaders in developing those technologies, so it's going to be potentially a really big boost for them. It might help some countries that have a lot of wind and solar and sun, which is most developing countries.
It's
not like Sweden is a developing, you know, like
It's
most developing countries have too much wind and sun, so that could help, you know, develop some kind of, you know, energy producing economy in those places. The major oil states are not going to have the greatest, you know, benefits from this. Saudi Arabia and Russia, who are already, you know, the price of oil has slid down, so they're already kind of suffering from that. But also, if you're ruining the world, which they're doing on multiple fronts, you just deal with yourself. And Congress cannot decide not to adopt this deal. It is not considered a treaty. It is a pact. And so Congress can't stop it. What they can do is prevent us from spending the money necessary to actually enact the things that we promised to enact. That's something they can do. But they cannot stop. We are in this deal. The deal has been struck.
Signed.
And Obama came out looking pretty good at the end of this because he was like, we're going to be in this deal, guys. Deal with yourselves. So that's exciting. And I'm, it's better than not having a deal.
I know. I said to you that I think I read something where like some big climate person or something was like, it doesn't save the world, but it gives us a chance to save the world.
It's we have a fighting chance to not ruin things. Because of the deal.
That's what came out of this.
Which is, I guess, that's what you get in a deal this. That's what compromise is, my friends. In any case, hi, America.
Hi, Iowa.
Hi, Iowa, specifically. We're talking to you. Ted Cruz is now leading in the polls there.
Wow.
What on God's green earth?
Got the biggest jump that anyone has ever gotten in a primary poll in the last five elections. Caucuses. So that's crazy. 20 years, right? I guess that would be
It is a 21-point jump. He's now polling at 31%, and Trump, who was far and away the leader by leaps and bounds the last time we checked in, is at 21.
The amount of jump that Ted Cruz got is the amount of percentage that Donald Trump is polling.
This election is killing it.
No.
This election
fucking killing it. The GOP came to play. They did.
You still have Carson at 13%. You have Rubio at 10. Jeb at 6. No one else is above 4. Jeb is really hanging on to that 6% and not giving up.
No.
This is Jeb
Nationally, he's hanging on to a much lower percent. We're going to talk about that in a second.
He currently still has the most money of any candidate. P.S.
But only a super PAC.
But his campaign...
But combined. His campaign has a
little
bit of money.
Still has more money than most of the other campaigns. It's not enough to launch the kind of campaign you'd need to work your way up from the sad state that he's in. But... Also, it can't make up for him being a dud. I mean, that's... But so, that's in the Bloomberg Des Moines Register poll. There's, which, and Cruz also has much higher likability ratings than anyone else, which, P.S., guys, he's the least likable person in this race. That's the one thing
he is a candidate for president because he is unlikable.
Correct.
That's how he exists as a candidate.
He can't have a favorable feeling towards Ted Cruz.
He's running on his unlikability.
Correct. So if 73% of you find him favorable, 73% of you are delusional people.
That's not an opinion
that
you can have.
No.
You're just actually wrong.
You're like literally, you're looking at the facts and you're just like not worried about them.
Which shouldn't be surprising. That's what's going on in the GOP primary.
The rise is primarily from evangelical voters. They were moving away from Carson. 45% of them are now saying that they'll support Cruz.
Yeah.
They make up 50% of the GOP pool in Iowa, so that's a pretty hefty percentage. Yeah. Also, he's doing well with very conservative voters. He's at 46% with them, 39% with Tea Party voters. And I am left to wonder whether the GOP is primarying itself.
Yeah.
It's like Tea Party primarying itself at the moment.
It is. Well, and also, I feel like that 21-point swing is a sign to me that they just can't make up their minds.
Well, it's unstable.
It's totally
unstable. A 21-point swing is not a good sign for anyone.
No, exactly. Like, they could just as easily... That's just who they like today.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz.
And they're liking everyone at different times.
Because they liked Ben Carson the exact same amount, not but a month ago.
Exactly. And Donald Trump in the meantime.
And what happens is... We start vetting these people once they get into first place.
Exactly.
So now I feel like it's
now
time.
We're going to talk
now
about
Now we're
going
to get to re-remember why we hated Ted Cruz the first time. When Ben Carson was in first place, it was because we all thought that we liked him and he was like a smart brain surgeon. And then we realized he was actually like a giant dipshit.
Right. He's kind of an idiot person.
He's kind of an idiot person. So people left him, which is actually sort of surprising in a GOP race, that they didn't just embrace
well,
the stupidity
Well, he just
there,
seemed lost.
He did.
He wasn't even talking about the issues. He was just talking about... nonsense.
Right. Ted Cruz seems like the type of prepared person.
Right. But I think that we'll find with him what we find a lot of the time with these types of candidates. He seems great because no one's heard him talk to them yet.
Right.
Once he has to talk to people, it's like Hillary Clinton. It's like how, I mean, I don't, not to put them in the same boat, but I mean, the thing that always sinks her is that when she gets the attention, it turns out she's a terrible speaker that comes off as totally uncharismatic and people don't like her.
Yeah, he's creepy to
he's
listen to.
He's really fucking creepy.
Yeah.
He's a creepy man. And so... The fact that he has all these hardline far-right positions makes him appealing to those voters because they know that about him.
Right.
But once he starts talking in public, it's like all bets are off as to what's going on with him. He's not a charismatic speaker, and he looks like a creeper.
He does.
He looks like a weirdo creeper.
Yes.
And he sounds like a weirdo creeper.
Yeah.
He's also...
He's got a weird voice.
He has a weird voice and a weird face. It's everything about him is a little weird. He looks like wonky.
Yes.
Fox News also has him leading, but only by 2 points. They have him up 2 points to Trump at 28 and Trump at 26. Monmouth University has another poll with him leading, but he's at 24, Trump at 19, and Carson at 13. So that's a much tighter. The Des Moines Register, as we've said many times, is the more reliable poll in this circumstance.
Yeah, they get this
right, usually. And also, Bob Vanderplatz, Iowa resident, ridiculous person.
Yes. He's terrible. He's run for some public office in Iowa, and he's literally as nutty as they come. Like, when we talk about sort of, like, crazy evangelicals, you know, there are a lot of them in the state, but he is, like,
he's a ringleader.
He's the ringleader of the craziest people that you can think of. Like, when you think of evangelicals who, like, you can't even sort of, like, wrap your brain around, like, what is going on in their brain, they are getting what they're getting from Bob Vanderplatz.
Correct. And he has now endorsed Cruz.
Yes.
So, and for nightmarish reasons, this is his quote. At the end of the day, we truly believe that Ted Cruz is the most consistent and principled conservative who has the ability to not only win Iowa, but I believe to win the Republican nomination. Yikes. Consistent and principled is exactly how you would describe Ted Cruz.
It is.
Not in the good way.
No.
I mean, that's a night to love that about him is to hate humanity.
I agree.
Jeb Bush and Chris Christie, by the way, don't even compete for the Bob Vanderplatz nomination. Although, this man is basically coronating the caucus winner. In Iowa.
Because the last two times he's done so.
He stumped for Huckabee and for Santorum, both unelectable in the general, but both winners
both
of the
won.
Iowa caucus.
Yeah.
The board of his organization, Family Leader, does not endorse. They've decided not to endorse anyone, but they did. So at least their organization isn't going to be used to promote Cruz. Like, they're not going to, like, mail things for him.
Right.
But
they
their
gave
entire leadership.
Permission.
They gave Bob Vanderplatz and their entire leadership permission to basically stump
Cruz.
Yeah,
and they voted unanimously.
The one guy abstained because he's good friends with one of the candidates. They voted 9-0 with one abstention.
Yeah.
Gross.
Wow.
Here's why Bob Vanderplatz, though, didn't support some of the other wingnut contenders, because it's sort of hilarious reasons. Ben Carson, This is what, I'm going to read you the whole quote, because I think it's like a quote that you would maybe say about anybody except Ben Carson in this race.
Yeah.
He said, "I think what's appealing about Ted Cruz is he still gives the outside appearance. He's not been embraced by the Washington establishment community on either side of the aisle, so he's still viewed as that outside candidate who really knows how things work and what needs to be changed." Implying that Ben Carson is too insidery.
Right?
Which is a curious... Ben Carson has never been elected to public office ever in his life.
And also, the reason that Ted Cruz is still outsidery in Washington, where he's been for years, is because everybody who has met him there hates him.
Correct. That's the reason.
including all members of his own party.
All of the members of his own party. So it's a curious...
That's so
a
he curious, is an outsider, but...
Certainly is
for the wrong reasons.
He's an outsider while being... He's managed to be inside and stay outside while being inside, which is not what you want in the leader of a country big enough that you have to cooperate with people to get things done.
No.
Like, if he can't even cooperate with his own party, that's not leadership skills.
No,
that's
not.
Nonsense talking. Donald Trump decided not to attend their forum. They have this forum in November.
Yeah.
The Presidential Family Forum. So they decided that they wouldn't deal with him. But they weren't leaning towards him anyhow. Although Bob Vanderplaat says that they will, quote, move on as friends, which sounds like a very Trumpism thing to say.
It
sounds like weird English that doesn't make any sense and doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Rubio was nixed because of his affiliation with the Gang of Eight.
Yes.
Not to be confused, as we've said many times, with the Gang of 2 through 14. Right.
The Gang of Eight is the immigration gang.
It's the immigration gang.
Yeah.
But Cruz has been really racking up these nutbag Iowa endorsements because Steve Ducey endorsed him.
No, Steve Deese.
I mean, Steve Deese. Oh,
yes.
This is Steve Deese. Is that different than Steve Deese?
Yeah, it's a different guy. I know. Steve Deese is the Fox and Friends guy. Steve Deese is this
wacko.
He's the
Iowa guy.
He's an Iowa radio guy.
I thought they were the same person.
My crazy aunt
the whole
is always
time.
Posting Steve Deese stuff.
Oh, Steve Deese.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not.
Or it might be Deese. I don't know.
We don't care.
I don't know how to say it, but it's not.
But in August, he endorsed Ted Cruz. I have been this whole time thinking they were the same person, that Steve Deese somehow also had a show in Iowa.
Well.
I'm whatever.
Yeah.
And then also. There was this member of, it was the Republican Party of Iowa's State Central Committee, a member of that committee, basically, the committee has pledged to stay neutral, so she resigned so that she could endorse Ted Cruz.
Right, for
or
the first time.
It's a he.
For the first time in
his
16 years.
His name is Loras, so I couldn't tell what that was. Yeah.
Is he in the, like, is he the in, Lord of the Rings what,
I was gonna
books
say,
or something?
Is he in like, a Dr. Seuss novel?
Oh, like, oh, yeah. That's the Lorax.
That's the Lorax. Yeah. That's close.
Yeah, he sounds like he could be an elf, though, and, you know.
Yes. There's a lot of mythical creatures he could be with the name Loras.
Yeah.
But we don't know what human creature he might be.
No, we don't.
So Ted Cruz is now sort of being considered the new semi-establishment favorite, or the new favorite.
Right.
Because he's surging.
As we've told you, and the reason why we said this in the rundown as the new, you know, front runner who's in second place is because he's not leading anywhere nationally, and he's only leading in Iowa because he's not leading in New Hampshire.
Exactly.
There are reasons why, you know, we talked about a while ago Jeb Bush being the front runner, and it was like mostly due to money. And we've talked about Marco Rubio being the front runner because people thought maybe he would be like the establishment guy that people would get behind. The reason that people are thinking that Ted Cruz is the front runner is also money, and it's just because he has more on hand.
Yes.
Like
that's P.S. because he's not been doing much.
He hasn't
himself.
Been having to use it.
He's, well, on the one hand, you know, Washington Post did a good article about why they think he's sort of like a contender, at least here. And it's mostly, it's the fact in the primaries, he's a contender in the primaries. They don't, you know, why they think he's a contender in the primaries is because he has staked himself out in the far right and not wavered. I mean, he is conservative in this Tea Party mold of conservative, and no one can say otherwise.
Right.
He hasn't done anything to sort of make us distrust his insanity.
Yeah.
But also, he has the second most money in the GOP race right now. He has $64.4 million on hand. That's combined super PAC and regular money.
Right.
In terms of recent fundraising, well, first of all, half of that is in his actual campaign. Unlike with Jeb Bush, he has more money in his actual campaign than Jeb Bush does.
Yeah.
So that's a lot. Also, in recent fundraising, he's just behind Jeb Bush. He's raised $12.2 million. The only person that really has been beating them, and these are slightly old numbers because they're from October, is Ben Carson, who was at the time raking in $20 million.
Yeah. And my guess is he probably hasn't used a lot of that money because he probably doesn't have the type of organization that he needs to, at least across the country, to get this done. So he's going to have to start using some of this money. But he's probably been right to not
paperwork.
Use it until now.
He's been doing paperwork.
Exactly.
His campaign has been getting him on ballots. They've been scoping out the scene. They've been laying groundwork. They haven't really been showing up anywhere.
Yeah.
So all of these people, hilarious side note, by the way, in the same period that Ben Carson got $20 million and Ted Cruz got $12.2 million, Rick Santorum made $388.
Oh.
Also, though, also of note, both Clinton and Bernie Sanders raised significantly more than any of these people. They were in the high 20s. Nice. So screw you guys.
Yeah.
In any case, he's the front runner in Iowa also. But the thing that really could cement his place is Super Tuesday.
Yep.
Being called the SEC primary for reasons related to football, I believe.
Correct, yes. Southeastern Conference.
Nightmare.
Yes.
That primary has Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, Tennessee, and Texas. He has good chances in all of those states because they are wingnut states.
Yeah.
So the real thing, like, if he can win Iowa, he can hang on till Super Tuesday. He won't have to drop out.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't have to drop out, Super Tuesday could be a real
This is the reason why some crazy candidates have hung on in the past.
That's what Santorum did,
and that's what Huckabee did too. Because, you know, Huckabee won Iowa and then got blown out in New Hampshire and then sort of like won a decent amount of primaries to sort of like hang around that were all in the South.
Like South Carolina y type places. Right.
But he, you know, if he wins all of those, I mean, you know, well, what could happen is that we could get to something fun that we're going to talk about.
We're going to talk about in a second. We're excited about it. But first, we're going to talk about some national polls, and then we're going to talk about what Donald Trump did this week, which you also probably heard about.
Yeah.
Nationally, despite Ted Cruz's sudden surge in Iowa,
He's
still polling at 16%, whereas he's in second place, solid second place now, but he's at 16%, and Trump is still at 35%. I mean, up 13 points.
Yeah. Nothing that he can say can...
No.
Because he derail said him. Some crazy things this week, like we said
and that
we're
only
going to
helps.
Talk about.
But I mean, that's helped
helps.
Every time.
Yeah, it has helped
and
every
also,
time.
His backers are more sort of... secure in their choice. 51% of them say they've made up their minds compared to only 25% of voters who support other candidates. So 50% of his voters have definitively made up their mind about him, which is bonkers.
That is bonkers.
He has a 20-point lead among non-college graduates. Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, yeah, exactly. What I have to think about him, and I know that people have been saying this when he was polling at 20%, so maybe this is just wrong because everything everybody thinks about his campaign has been wrong so far.
We have, it's like, unprecedented.
This has to cap at a
somewhere.
Certain point.
Yeah.
Like, and I think the issue is that there's still just 30 other people running at this point.
Well,
so
I think they have made a real effort to court these kinds of voters in their party. And so it doesn't have to cap at a logical point. It's going to cap inside of their own party for sure.
Right.
It's not going to spread like wildfire to the outside of their party people.
No, it's
but
not.
It is going to cap at a higher point, I think, than you would imagine. It's the same way that Bernie Sanders polls so high because new voters who don't normally vote and aren't usually part of the process are invested in his campaign.
Yeah.
Independent voters are invested in his campaign.
Yeah.
They find people, like new people are sort of in the in the party now. They're in the tent.
Yeah. Donald
Trump has brought voters into the tent.
Finding new racists everywhere.
Well, and also the Tea Party brought all these new voters into the tent, and all of them are confused and don't know what they're up to for the most part because they think a lot of contradictory things. I mean, they came in on the heel of the bank bailouts.
Yes.
So, like, they don't know what they think about anything. Financial regulation
came
is not
the
middle.
Came in for the bank bailouts and stayed
for
the
racism. Right, like, financial bailouts, like, financial regulation is kind of their deal, and that's not what the middle is trying to do. That's not what Jeb Bush is up to.
Yeah.
He's not trying to regulate them, you know, regulate Wall Street.
Right.
So, there's some confused voters who have been lost in the shuffle for a while who are finding a home in Donald Trump's racism because they too are racists.
Yes.
So I feel like the cap, I know there will be a cap, I agree with you on that. It is going to be higher than I think we could possibly imagine because they've let these people into the tent.
Yeah.
They aren't people that you want in your tent.
No.
No tent should want these people.
Right. They talk about having a big tent, but you don't want it to be too big.
You don't want a tent that's too big. No. When your tent is too big, your tent stops being one individual tent and becomes a lot of mini tents.
That's right.
Which is what's happening to them.
Yeah.
But so Ben Carson's still at third. Rubio is in fourth at 9% nationally. Yep. Jeb, 3%.
The lowest polling, the lowest number that he's had
slipping.
In this CBS poll, which is what this poll
he's
is.
He's slipping. And Fiorina is now at 1% nationally.
Yikes.
I mean, I never thought she was a real person in this.
I know.
She was like too Michelle Bachmann-y. She was lying too much. It was too crazy. But this poll was conducted before his statements that we're about to talk about banning all Muslims from entering the country. So this poll doesn't reflect that. I would guess his numbers went up. Just a wild guess, because that seems to be the logic of what's happening here.
Yeah.
As we discussed before, Cruz is both nationally and in Iowa making inroads with evangelicals.
Yeah.
Carson in October was leading with the evangelicals, but now Cruz and Trump are running neck and neck with them, and Carson is falling behind.
Yeah.
And then those two are also very close with conservative Republicans. This is so bonkers because Ted Cruz and Donald Trump have nothing to do with each other. They could not be more different. Like, I get that they're both crazy.
Yeah.
And I get that they both sort of appeal to this rebellious spirit within the far right of the Republican Party.
Well, and that's what I think it is. I think they do have a similar vibe, just in the, not vibe, but in the sense that, like, a lot of people say that they like Donald Trump because he tells it like it is. He, right. like, set, he means what he says, and he sort of, and I think the same can be said about
right. Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz is, like,
is not, you know, telling it like it is, but he's consistent in his positions, and he's,
right.
his positions
exactly.
are crazy.
Yes.
And he doesn't apologize for that.
No, he doesn't.
But they, policy-wise, really couldn't be more
no,
different.
Not
they
at
have
all.
Nothing to do with each other.
No, they don't.
It's like two stratospherically different. It's like bonkers to me that they're competing for the same pool of voters, and that those voters are evangelicals.
Right.
Because we're going to talk also in a little bit about right. Trump's Christian credibility, which is suspect.
I think they're just competing for angry people.
They're competing for angry people. They're competing for people that aren't really voting on the basis of policy, but are just voting on the basis of anger.
Right.
They're just like a roving mob of like angry,
yes.
confused people
yeah,
that are
it.
Just wandering from
yeah.
campaign to campaign
but if he
looking
can somehow,
for a home.
But if he can steal all the evangelical votes from Carson and he can steal a decent chunk of the angry people from Trump, then he may have
right.
done it.
He might have done it. And those are all people, by the way, that shouldn't have been in their tent to begin with. Those are people they only invited in recently and don't belong in any tent because they're hateful people.
Yep.
Trump won the internet this week.
Oh, man.
As usual, he won the internet by saying something even more extreme than he had previously said.
Yeah.
And somehow that made the most news. That's the only campaign that anyone actually talked about this week was, again, Donald Trump's campaign.
Yep.
That's because less than a day after Obama came on and made his vague remarks about how we were going to get rid of gun violence by defeating ISIS or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But he also pleaded for us to not take this out on Muslim Americans and not be Islamophobes.
Yeah.
Donald Trump took a few steps in the opposite direction
yeah.
And called for a, quote, total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
I mean,
this
oh,
is
God.
Probably, I mean, he's a hateful human being who also, as you probably learned on the internet this week, is not loved by eagles. And I think
no.
this might be why. These
yes.
un-American sentiments might be enough to piss off the
yeah.
eagle community.
If you haven't watched that.
Do that immediately.
Do it
it's
immediately.
On our Facebook page. We posted it a little late because we were assuming you'd already seen it. But at a certain point, I realized not everyone could have possibly seen it.
Right.
And I wanted to make sure we did our part.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and we couldn't be the people who didn't post it.
No, that would be embarrassing. but also, Donald Trump's own church is trying to reject him at
yeah.
this moment. He's a Presbyterian.
Yeah.
Apparently. Allegedly.
Well, see, this is a thing that I have... I mean, I don't think that he's probably religious.
No, of course.
All.
No.
And that's
you don't
the
have
thing...
to say that as if you're saying something controversial.
No, I
he's
know.
He's definitively not religious.
He's not.
He's
yeah.
bullshitting his way through any question. He basically can't answer any questions about his religion.
I wish...
This has happened on the campaign trail repeatedly.
I know. I wish, and I know that you wish also, that we lived in a world where Donald Trump could be leading the GOP primary as a person who could just declare
just not
himself not be
right.
not religious.
I wish that you could lead any campaign that way.
Right. Yeah.
You can... I mean, I guess, in a sense, Bernie Sanders is yeah, almost
sort of.
Doing it.
Almost
I mean,
doing
he's
it.
Jewish,
in
but he's not talking about being Jewish, and no one's asking because no one wants to bring that up.
But he's talking about... He's talking about Christian morals without really necessarily...
Without referencing Christianity.
Right, exactly.
Which is what you
Although
could
do. Although I think
do.
He has a few
I
times,
mean,
actually.
He has but, a few times, but as a way of sort of establishing that we all have the same moral
yes,
value system.
Right, exactly.
But he is not in any way implicated himself.
No, not at all.
So it shows it's possible, guys.
Yes.
And anyway, moving on. Presbyterians in New York...
Trying to get rid of him.
Trying to distance themselves from Trump.
Right.
Because
also, there's no proof that he's even one of them anyway. He claims to go to this church, but no one can show that he's, like, on the
right.
rolls there, a member. The Presbyterian, you know, Church of the
New York.
United States or New York or whatever
no.
it is. Like, can't,
well, the Presbyterian doesn't... Church of New York released a statement trying to distance themselves from him, saying
right.
they don't approve of this ban on Muslims talk. They think that
right.
this is horrible.
Right.
Then... Later, so Think Progress posted a thing about how they had basically written this open letter denouncing him.
Yeah.
And also, you know, he's sort of on the campaign trail faltered many times when
right.
talking
wouldn't,
about
wouldn't name his favorite Bible verse because it was too personal to him and,
right.
that, you know, things like that. Like, I mean, he just is not, he's not a person who would know how to answer that question because he doesn't go
not,
to church.
Not a Christian person. but then later, the stated clerk of the Presbyterian Church mm-hmm. of the U.S., whatever that means,
yeah.
Issued a statement saying that... Because these New York churches had asked for judicial action against him. You can basically be excommunicated from the Presbyterian Church. They were asking that the church excommunicate him. And they said that they couldn't take action against him because, quote, there is no factual evidence that Mr. Trump currently holds membership in any local congregation.
Oh, boy.
So he's not a member of a church. That's why they can't get
yeah.
rid of him. It's tough when you have someone... who you can't get rid of because they're not actually a member, but you're still being tarnished by their horrible ideas.
Them claiming to be one of you.
Also,
he was on the wrong side of Bill O'Reilly on this, which is like when you
where
know.
You, that's when you know. That's where you stop yourself and you're like, I'm on the wrong side of everything. Like,
yes. Yeah.
Bill O'Reilly had Trump on his show. He's been making a lot of the TV rounds recently. He's going to be on Jimmy Kimmel on Wednesday. He's like all over too many places.
Too many. everybody wants
And I think he's going to be on like Stephen Colbert. Like he's going to be on another one of those shows as well. In any case, O'Reilly said that Trump's proposal to ban all Muslims from entering the country would hurt our standing in the fight against ISIS and Islamic terrorists. He said, we need the friendly Muslim nations. You can't insult them like that. You can't. Then went on to say, you can vet them, but you can't insult the whole region. Trump said he disagreed. And then reiterated his weird claim that immigrants should be, quote, perfectly vetted.
In a great, great way, probably. Like, he didn't say that. But, like, that is probably, like,
The way that he uses language is so weird and so awkward.
I know.
So, in any case, because we don't know how to perfectly vet immigrants, that's why he's claiming that we have to shut down all immigration until we can figure it out.
Yeah.
But another weird Trumpism that he said during this, was that we're not insulting. This is about security. It's not about religion. This is about security. We cannot allow people to come into this country that have horrible things on their minds. Like, any horrible things? Like the Kardashians? Like, what constitutes a horrible thing?
No.
If they have, like potty humor on their minds, is that a horrible thing?
Yeah.
Like, how do you know? Who decides what a horrible thing is? If I would maybe ban people who have green bean casseroles on their minds,
sure.
I consider that a horrible thing.
Yeah.
But I can't know how we decide this.
No.
I would imagine many Americans don't agree with me because it's a classic dish featured in Thanksgivings all across America.
Nationwide.
Yes. Uh-huh. So in any case, this left O'Reilly in the bizarre position of having to suggest that Trump hadn't thought through his ideas.
No.
Which, once Fox News is demanding a coherent idea from you, you're in the shit.
I know.
So then he goes on to say that he's had calls from friends of mine who happen to be Muslim saying, you're the only one with the courage. You're the only one with the courage to say it. He's basically...
Which is not necessarily a compliment, by the way.
Also, this is like the I have some black friends comment of the cycle.
Totally.
Like, I have Muslim
black friends.
They've
friends.
They've called me and told me that I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah.
That's a fact that I can't verify, but will definitely tell you on television.
Yeah.
Then he goes to another interview with Don Lemon, which is always a disaster on CNN tonight, and was asked what he would do about, like, diplomats and people doing business, because there are Muslim people coming in to do things that are ultimately for the good of everyone.
Yes.
And he said, that there would be some exceptions to the ban. So I think, fortunately, we can rest assured that the Bin Ladens can continue to come in and out of Texas and visit their friends, the Bushes, without incident.
That's right.
So, like, basically what this read to me as was, like, rich people can still come.
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as they're enriching the economy by being rich people who are here, then they can come.
Yeah.
And then it said he didn't mean it would go on forever. He meant it... until we can get our hands around it, until we find out what the hell is going on.
Until we can get our hands around it?
First of all, well, Lemon asked what he meant by that, because I think America was wondering, and Trump responded, why is there such hatred and such viciousness?
Oh.
We know the answer. Yes. We have our hands around it. We've been drone attacking the entire region for years.
Right.
Like, the answer is clear.
Right. And also Donald Trump asking about hatred and viciousness.
Right.
I mean... Hello. Hot kettle black.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Jesus.
What the hell is he talking about?
Right.
He's lacking a kind of self-awareness that I think is almost admirable. Like, it would be not easy to go around lacking awareness to that extent.
Yeah.
You would have to live in a world with other people who would often be confused and baffled by your actions, and you'd have to somehow find a way to get along while being that delusional.
Yeah.
That would be hard. Easier when you have tons of money, but...
Yeah.
You know, whatever. In any case, the GOP, this is something we hinted at earlier.
Yeah.
The GOP this week, there was a report in Washington Post that sources say they are preparing for a contested convention.
They apparently met about it already.
They had a dinner on Monday about
with
it.
Rence Priebus,
who
runs the party.
Who, by the way, I don't think should be in charge of strategizing for this, because he was in charge of strategizing to make sure that the 2012 primary didn't happen to them again. And what he brought them was a worse primary. This is so much crazier than the 2012 primary in so many ways. And could you have imagined that was a possibility? I would have never imagined that in a million years. And we're usually good at predicting things. But I would have never thought that Rince Priebus was responsible for making sure that that didn't happen to them again. That was his mission. He set, a, you know, he said that they were going to do fewer debates.
Right. They
he
changed,
said
the, primary
they changed
calendar,
the primary they calendar. They changed a lot of the rules and somehow invited even more craziness into the midst. So I wouldn't be plotting this with him, but whatever.
Yeah.
He's the one who called the dinner. In any case, let's talk about what a contested convention is.
It's exciting.
Because it's exciting. And it's just the kind of thing that Brent and I just like love. But basically what it means is that no candidate would have enough delegates to be declared the official candidate off on the first
round. After the first ballot, yes.
So the when you have delegates come to your primary, they're responsible for voting for who they say they're going to vote for, who they've pledged themselves to in the first ballot only.
Right.
Once that, second ballots happen, all bets are off.
Right, exactly. And they are, like you said, they're required to, because they go through their state party conventions and things like that, and they are bound to whoever that they have, like you said, claimed that they're going to be. But if nobody has enough at that point,
then they go into second, third, and fourth rounds of voting.
And it's a free-for-all.
It's a free-for-all.
And that's when...
It's the caucuses all over again.
And that's when shenanigans start happening.
That's when shenanigans happen.
You start...
Because then you
crazy.
Start jockeying
you start
for
deal
second,
making and various other.
Well,
things.
And when the Republicans suspect this is going to happen, they have to start figuring out how to, you know, who they want to target to be the second place choice of early on, so that they can get into the convention with the idea that if one of the candidates gets knocked out, the second vote will go to them. So they have to start this deal making pretty early in the process. 1976 was the last time that they had a contested convention. That was when Reagan challenged the
Ford.
Sitting president, Gerald Ford, and that. It was a while ago. Naturally, because it's the GOP, there are many people who remember that still in the party.
Yeah.
Because they're not a young party.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they are sort of a young party
2016.
Now.
2016. It'd be the 40-year anniversary of it.
Anniversary. They
can just party like it's 1976.
Yes. I love it.
Yeah.
But so in any case, like 20 GOP officials and strategists convened at some restaurant with Rince Priebus to talk about this. Because, and according to most sources that were at the dinner or know about the dinner, they basically were concerned that Trump would make it through the primaries with too many delegates.
Right, exactly.
And that they needed some other person for the mainstream wing of the party to coalesce around in the event that that happened.
Right.
As you know, before this, they were trying to kind of avoid thinking that this was a possibility. We, 4 years ago, talked about Ron Paul making a delegate play inside the hall, which is something that you can do. I mean, he's the only one who's really ever attempted that in our lifetimes or in our recent memory.
Yeah.
But so basically, some of these third string candidates do come in because the number of delegates that are given out is proportional in certain states. It's on a state by state basis. So some of them are winner takes all. Some of them are proportional. You don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
But some of these smaller candidates come in with delegates that they then can often try to sort of like make plays for other delegates when the other candidates start dropping out. So this would be that, but like on a huge scale, because this would be that, but for the leader. This wouldn't just be a play for third string candidates, delegates.
Right.
This would be the two, like the main wings of the party battling it out for delegates inside of their own convention hall.
Dreams.
Dreams upon dreams
so
upon
good.
Dreams. So this is also, this puts a lot of pressure on the candidates to make sure that they qualify in as many states and regions as they can. Getting on the ballot to get these delegates is actually pretty time-consuming
and
taxing.
And you even have to get delegates like in Democratic districts. I mean, it's literally, when you're trying to get delegates, if you're making a play for delegates, you literally have to get like every single solitary one. And that's what Ron Paul was good at doing. He was like good at going,
getting
delegates
plays
like,
in
the
places.
Main caucus or whatever, you know, where like nobody cared to go, but he was like going and making sure that he had enough people.
Exclusively in the sort of big... In the big game, they focus on the Republican states because that's kind of where their bread and butter is. They don't focus on states where they have no chance of winning in a general for the most part, especially smaller states. The Vermont delegates are not a hotly contested. So a lot of them won't even get on the ballot in
Vermont. We saw a little of this actually in 2008 with Clinton and Obama.
Yeah.
Because that got drawn out so far. You saw Obama going to like a lot of, you know, like making sure that he picked up delegates like at the Wyoming caucus or whatever, you know, which would be places that no one would necessarily care about. So you have to be really diligent. You have to have a good campaign organization, and you have to be, you know, you really just have to be on it. And
this
it looks
is
like,
where Ted Cruz is really going to kill us.
And
because Ted Cruz is a fucking meticulous asshole.
Right, and that's what I said. I was like, you know, there are a lot of evil people in that Republican primary. You've got Ben Carson, who's an evil, we've now decided, an evil fool.
Right.
And Donald Trump is an evil, racist buffoon. And Ted Cruz might be the real-life evil genius.
I think that he is. This is right in his wheelhouse. This kind of scheming is what... Right. Is exactly what he's good at.
Yeah.
He's a meticulous asshole.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
I mean, that's his deal. So right. he's smart. He's smart. He's a smart guy.
Yeah.
Lest we forget, he lacks empathy.
He's a sociopath. I mean, like, yeah, exactly.
But he's a smart guy. He's already qualified in more than 40 states. A lot of these people don't bother getting on the ballots in small Democratic states because it's just not worth the trouble. He has already qualified in 40 states. That's a lot.
Newt Gingrich wasn't even getting on the ballots in some of the places where he was going to have to, like, actually run a campaign.
Exactly.
Lest we forget. So Ted Cruz is already way out in front
of... He's way out in front of a lot of the other campaigns. And hilariously, Stuart Stevens, who was, as you recall, a Mitt Romney advisor, we talked about him a lot in the last election, he described the scenario as not really even being just about Trump. He just said that this primary is a Hunger Games scenario and that, like, nothing is going right, basically. Yeah. I mean, that this is just sort of, like, become a dog-eat-dog, like, gang war. Like, I don't even know how to describe what's happening here.
Yeah.
And Trump also... Hilariously. So they're trying not to specifically say that this is because of Trump that they're discussing
because they
don't want him to run as an independent.
Right, which he's already said.
Which he's already said he's going to do.
Yeah.
And he has a pretty... one of his only moments of clarity of late has been in offering some perspective on what this process could mean for him. Because he knows this doesn't spell... If they start deal-making behind his back,
right,
it doesn't spell good things for his campaign.
The deal-making is going to benefit the establishment people.
Exactly.
Which he knows.
Which he knows. He said... The deal-making, that's my advantage. The disadvantage is that I'd be going up against guys who grew up with each other, who knew each other intimately, and I don't know who they are, okay? That's a big disadvantage. These guys stay close. They all know each other. They want each other to win. Right.
These are the people who are going to be making the
inside
deals
the convention,
to pick the next president.
Yeah, inside the convention, being the outsider candidate is not such a great pick.
No.
So this could be an interesting thing to watch him sort of make a play within, because he prides himself on his deal making.
He does.
But he's certainly got the deck stacked against him.
He's going to have to prove the deal making.
But hilariously, when Ben Carson's campaign, or Ben Carson heard about the Washington Post article that talks about this session, because the article specifically mentions that they don't want to say anything about Trump because they don't want to spur him into an independent campaign, even as the article was telling him that information in the article.
Exactly. Yeah.
But Ben Carson said, "If this is correct, every voter who is standing for change must know they're being betrayed. I won't stand for it. I assure you Donald Trump won't be the only one leaving the party."
Oh, my God.
Oh!
Four-way race? Between an establishment Republican and Donald Trump and Ben Carson and then whoever the Democrat is?
What?
I mean...
Oh, my God. What
come
a dream.
On.
What?
That.
That's the dream.
I mean...
This would be... This is it. I don't need personal success in life.
I know.
If this can happen. They can stop making movies and television too. I don't need any more entertainment after that. I will be done. I will feel that I've done it.
I think we'll have made it as a nation at that point.
Yeah,
too,
well, yeah, this will this first of all, it will make it it will make us making the right choice inevitable. And PS, if that looks like it's going to happen and Bernie Sanders is not our candidate, I know, right? Calling the bluff of every Democrat.
Seriously.
Because
that's our chance to, like,
that's
really
our chance.
Do it.
We can actually win with a progressive if that happens.
Yeah.
And we know that that's what Democrats want. The
right.
only
so
people that are voting
it.
For Hillary are voting for her because they think she's electable, not because they love her.
Give in, everyone.
Give in.
Yeah.
Holy moly. My mind is being blown.
Yeah.
In any case, Carson also went the extra mile of... oddly releasing his healthcare plan at this late stage where he's hemorrhaging voters.
I know, which is a ridiculous plan, as you might
what a surprise.
Imagine. But it's also, you know, it comes with a photo of him on the front, and then it says, it's got we the people in, like, you know, the actual, like, calligraphy font from,
right.
like, you know, the declaration or whatever, and it's like, and it says health, heal, inspire, revive.
That's already a great start.
Oh, and it's called the Prescription for Empowerment,
yes.
too. It's all about empowering people to not have enough money to pay for their health.
Correct. Yes, it creates health empowerment accounts. Those are HSAs. We already have those.
Have those.
They don't work very well.
Yeah.
Those, and then giving people high deductible insurance plans with their health empowerment accounts.
Right. So unlike HSAs, which, like, some people have some healthcare or health plans, like, come with those and you, like, pay into those. Some employers pay into
your HSA
for you. Unlike that, part of his plan, when you get a Social Security number,
you
so
get
like
an
when
HSA.
You're born, you get an HSA and you can start, you know, putting money into it immediately.
Because this is for empowerment, Brent, not savings.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so you can start stocking away money to pay for your lack of health insurance early in life.
Right, but it's ridiculous because, first off, all this is a tax-free savings plan, which is what an HSA is. Also, you can open a tax-free savings
plan. You can do that already.
You can. So this is a thing that already... He's basically giving you something that you could just start if you wanted to.
Right,
so he's not really giving you anything.
No.
And then you have this...
What he is doing is taking something away from you because all of the health plans under it are high-deductible health plans.
Right.
Which means that you are basically paying out of pocket for most of your health insurance.
So really, you're getting this thing that you could already have if you wanted anyway. And then the healthcare... You're going to have to pay still for your insurance plan.
Right. And that plan won't actually cover any of your health care.
Right, exactly.
Because
he's removing all of the things like that Obamacare like forces things to cover.
Right.
So empowering the health care companies to, you know, to not cover any of your health care.
And right.
And then empowering giving you a high deductible. So you have
pick
this
and choose
money,
which procedures you can afford.
So you have this money in the savings account that you're only using to pay towards your deductible, which is high. So you're basically going to blow all of the money in the savings account the first time that you get sick anyway. So you're basically back to square one.
So what this empowers you to do is pay just as much as you're currently paying for health insurance, plus all the costs of your health insurance.
Exactly.
That's it.
Bingo. Yeah. But he doesn't forget about Medicare,
no,
though.
No, of course not.
You can still get that.
If you're over 70.
You have to be 70. Yeah. And he's also going to cap how much the government can pay out on your behalf. So
you're empowered to pay the difference.
You're empowered to pay the difference. Yes. Exactly. Yes.
As far as Medicaid. A lot of empowerment.
Yeah.
As far as Medicaid, he's going to reduce subsidies to states for Medicaid. So presumably poor people will also be empowered to not be able to afford health insurance, just like everyone else.
Yeah.
And then...
People are still going to be allowed to buy the same health insurance that everyone else
is. That's so kind.
Which they obviously can't afford because they're poor,
They've
which is why we're getting the Medicaid.
They've been empowered to do that their whole lives.
Everyone
is empowered to buy a health insurance
plan. Any poor person can go buy a health care plan right now if they want to.
Right.
They can't
because they don't
have any money.
Because you need money to do that, and that's where being poor comes in.
Right.
So this sort of eliminates... It sort of like uses circular logic to basically prevent poor people from getting health insurance.
Right. He will give poor people...
Money, I assume, in some
form of like tax break or something like that to put into their HSA, but they don't have a health plan and they also have a high deductible, so they're
still
back to being broke.
What happens with the high deductible plan is that it reinstates itself every year. So after you've spent all of your savings for 1 year on the health insurance, on the money that your health plan didn't cover,
right, exactly.
You then go back to square one, except you don't have savings.
Yeah, this happens to me every year. I have a medication that's ridiculously
expensive. I was curious at your company.
And I am not, like, I am a person who, like, has money put into my HSA, and I still have to, you still have to put in some of your own money, and that money is always gone almost immediately, and it's like $6,000 or $7,000 or something, my deductible, which is high, and I'm paying half of that out of pocket for, like, this one fucking drug that I have to buy.
Well, it's
like, if you were a person who didn't make a boatload of money, then...
You don't have any money to put back in.
I just basically claim to make a boatload of money, which I'm not a rich person, but I have I have the money to cover that, but, like, people don't.
People don't. That's... Not everyone has that. I mean, I remember when this insurance plan was switched at your
right,
job.
You were mad for me.
I was mad for him.
Yeah.
Sometimes I have a habit of getting really angry on behalf of people that have things happening that have nothing to do with me. There was one time where one of my good friends from high school's parents were going to charge them rent for living at home right after college, after she was already saddled with school debt. And I got involved on her behalf and basically argued them down. So sometimes I just...
Yeah,
I just get involved where I don't belong, and this was one of those times that I was angry on behalf of somebody else.
Yeah.
I was not happy about it.
Yeah.
In any case, in the Democratic primary, holy cow, New Hampshire, Bernie Sanders is 10 points ahead of Hillary Clinton.
Still Bernie country, and at 50%, too. That's a lot of percent.
That's half of the percentage. That's
right.
50% of the percent.
Yeah.
O'Malley's still at 1%.
Oh, Clinton has 40.
Yeah, she's jumped 10 points since they last polled this, but Biden was in the race when they last polled this.
Yeah.
So of the 14% that he was getting in that race, 10% went to her.
Which is no surprise,
but still Sanders... has the lead.
Yeah. There's an interesting thing that's happening in New Hampshire. And
right, because New Hampshire's a unique state.
Yes. If you are not a member of either party, you're considered an undeclared person, and you can vote in either of the primaries.
They have open primaries there.
Right. So Sanders is killing it with the people who are undeclared.
Right.
Now, but a lot of those people, now they only polled the people who claim that they're going to vote in the Democratic primary, but they could switch at any point. And people, I think the percentage was like 48% to 38% of the undeclared people said that they would rather vote in the GOP
primary. More of them would
because
rather
like,
vote.
Who obviously.
I would rather vote in the GOP primary too.
It sounds way more exciting. I would be excited to vote for Bernie Sanders.
I'm excited to vote for Bernie Sanders.
But I mean, I see
what's happening here.
To get to pick from that lot.
Well, actually, also to potentially
screw it all up.
I just had a crazy epiphany, though, related to what we were talking about with delegate counts. You know who's going to really kill it in Republican states if he can get himself on the ballot during the Democratic primary is Bernie Sanders. Could he have a delegate play?
Yeah, maybe.
Because he is somebody who, because he does so well with independent voters, and also people on the far right, oddly, he, he could really kill it in states like Wyoming that don't have a chance of... Oh my God.
Interesting.
Oh my God.
Should we get to his people?
Let's get to his people. Let's talk.
He's not the evil genius that Ted Cruz is.
No, exactly.
You might not have thought about this
yet.
No,
exactly. He's not as schemey as...
No.
He's just sort of winging it out there in the primaries. He might need our evil genius to come in handy.
But he's going to need...
He's going to need those undeclared,
need those
to
undeclared
show up.
People to vote for him.
Yeah.
Or else he'll lose.
Right.
Because that's where he's really crushing her.
Exactly. Some other interesting findings. People think he's the most progressive, obviously. But they also think that... He's best to deal with the economy,
obviously,
which is,
probably.
Is obvious for his supporters, but I wouldn't say obvious for the world supporters.
True.
Because he's not establishment.
Yeah.
And then also think he's the best person to deal with guns.
That's a shocker.
I mean, that's his one thing that got him into all sorts of trouble.
Yeah, because
he's not strong enough on... He doesn't agree with Brent and I's proposal to get rid of all the guns.
All guns, right.
So he was getting a lot of flack from Hillary's people because they can't find flack with him otherwise because he's kind of unflackable.
Yes, he is.
Like... Unflappable also.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
But unflackable as well.
Yeah.
He's hard to, it's hard to find flack with him.
Yes.
He's just saying the right things and not caring about the political consequences.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah. And there's one other thing that we want to have a very serious conversation with you about.
You guys,
it might be done in the form of a blog, but
it's
we're
about to be done in the form
of
speech right now, though.
We're talking about it right now because we're not going to let this slide. But people overwhelmingly think that Hillary Clinton is the best person to deal with ISIS.
Get a grip, America.
There are a million reasons why. First off, as you rightly pointed out, we have ISIS in large part due to policies that, you know, Hillary Clinton voted for.
You want to
know Iraq War specifically.
If you want to know what it takes to create a terrorist force that moves into a political vacuum and terrorizes everyone, what that takes is a war that's fought for no reason, that gets rid of leadership that was keeping an area under control, and instead installs nothing.
Right. And that Iraq War was her response to dealing with Al-Qaeda.
Yeah. So her response to terrorism is what brought us terrorism. It brought us more terrorism.
Right. And this also, Democrats, put on your thinking caps here for a second. Remember back to 2007 when you were primary voters. You know,
remember why
a short 8 years ago. Do you remember why you didn't vote for her
remember
the first time?
Remember why that strapping young man who came in at the last minute and just seemed to kill it was so appealing to you?
It was this.
It was the Iraq War vote.
It was this.
Here's another thing I want to say. And I've said this before, and I actually was forced to lecture everyone at work about this recently.
Yeah.
There is a difference between experience and good ideas.
Totally.
You can have a lot of experience doing something wrong.
Wrong.
That's what Hillary Clinton offers.
Yes.
She has a lot of experience in the foreign policy world. I get it.
Yeah.
I get why people think she has more experience in that world. I don't get why anyone thinks that experience has led her to be a better choice, since she has routinely acted incorrectly given that information and experience that she has.
Yeah.
She is a person who has the information and is making the wrong
choices.
There
are people who exactly. I mean, you know, a member of ISIS might have a good idea about how to stop ISIS.
Right.
I mean, I'm not calling her, I'm not comparing her to that, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
there are types of experience, and she has a type of experience, but it doesn't make her the answer haver.
No, it doesn't make her a person who has the right idea.
No.
Because she's proven again and again that
she
has the wrong idea. So to vote for her just because you think she's better on foreign policy is a crazy lapse in judgment that cannot be explained by facts.
Right. No.
That's it.
And... presumably, a lot of these people are people who didn't vote for her in 2007
you know,
because of her Iraq
who else
vote.
People think would be great on foreign policy? Ted Cruz on the right. I mean, he's running away with that vote. I don't know why, because he doesn't have any experience in foreign policy.
Right.
But I mean, these ideas of who does and does not have experience in foreign policy are not related to who does and does not share your vision for what you should do in the world.
Yeah.
Like, if you are voting for Hillary Clinton because she has experience but don't share her vision, you are voting against your own interests and doing the opposite of what a vote is for.
Yeah.
Don't be an idiot.
That's right.
Also, though, show up to the fucking polls.
Oh, millennials.
Millennials.
Come on. First off, this is a poll that probably didn't need to be taken.
No.
because
Sanders is leading with millennials. Surprise, surprise.
Right, shocker. Everybody.
Although, this is a number that I think Clinton's campaign needs to look at. It is the number that explains how Barack Obama became our front runner.
Yeah.
It's a number when young voters get invested in the process.
Yeah.
They get invested because they're excited about someone. They don't get invested because they just feel like voting because it's their civic duty. They never vote because it's their civic duty. They're the worst.
Right.
We are the worst.
They vote because they got excited about
something. They vote because they get excited about something. Yeah. Currently, what they're excited about, the thing that's making them show up to the polls, is Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders.
That's the guy.
And democratic socialism, because only 9% of the people polled thought that there was anything wrong with democratic socialism.
We said months ago that the era of the Cold War babies is over.
Yeah, they don't care about that.
They don't care. Yeah. When Brent and I were not old enough when the Berlin Wall fell to really have it affect us as a political event.
Yeah.
We were just kids who were watching television happen.
Yep.
But like, because of that, the idea of socialism being an evil thing was not a part of our upbringing.
Yeah.
It wasn't something, it was something that was secondhand by the time it got to us, and it didn't seem that big a deal.
Yeah. But this poll that Sanders is leading, they polled millennials who claimed that they were at least 50-50 maybe going to vote. Which is, all millennials need to be 100% going
all
to vote.
All millennials. I'm embarrassed for us because I've been talking up our generation recently. I've been very proud of us. I think we're an exciting activist generation. I think that it's exciting what we did with Occupy. I think it's been exciting how we've dealt with a lot of, you know, with Black Lives Matter. I think some of these things that we're involved in are very exciting. But I once went to a panel in college given by a bunch of anarchists that were attending college with me about anarchy. I don't know. Why not? And one of them was asked, what do you do about voting? And they were basically like, listen, you need to exercise as much influence as you can in as many ways as you can. So I am an anarchist and I believe in a certain set of principles, but I also have to have a set of practical principles that I know I can exercise in an election so that I make sure I don't give up my voice. Yeah. Like, you can have your great ideas and your Occupy ideas, and you can talk about government being broken, and you can do all of those things, and you can say that, you know, mainstream politics isn't your thing, but you still have to exercise that voice. That's one of the tools that you have. You can't give up one of your tools.
It's because you're
It's one of the few tools you have.
Right.
Protesting is one of them, for sure. You know, lobbying is one of them, if you're into that, for sure.
Right, but if you don't vote, you're giving up one of them.
But if you don't vote, you're giving up one of the most important ones. So you have to vote.
Yeah.
You can do all the other stuff, too, but you have to show up.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to be lecturing you guys about this.
No.
I am furious with you.
Yeah.
For even admitting this to a pollster. If you're not going to show up, don't tell anyone. That's embarrassing. I can't imagine. It's so funny because I feel like actually with millennials, a lot of them have admitted to me, like people I've worked with or whatever, have admitted to me that they don't intend to vote. And I've been like, this is the most embarrassing thing about yourself you could have ever told me.
Yeah, don't tell me that,
you know, you like to fondle teddy bears.
Yeah.
I would have been less embarrassed for you than I currently am knowing that you don't vote. That is really fucking embarrassing.
Yeah, that's just a fun fact.
That's just, exactly. Right. That's gossip. If you're not voting, though, that's not even gossip. That's embarrassing for you.
Yeah.
You should be embarrassed about that.
I agree.
I'm embarrassed for you, but not embarrassed enough to tell you that you've got to stop being an idiot. In any case, here's some other general election news. Jimmy McMillan of the Rent is Too Damn High party retiring. We're finally at the end of that road. Rent is still too damn high.
Yeah.
So he was never given the platform with which to solve that.
No.
Also,
he did kill it in a couple debates, though.
That's true.
For governor.
He made some vaguely anti-Semitic remarks at a certain point that I think may have also limited his credibility.
That was part of it.
But his performance in the gubernatorial debates against Cuomo were one of the political highlights of the last century.
Yeah. And his facial hair has...
It's never faltered.
It's inspired a new generation.
One thing that has faltered is his use of grammar and typo and his proofreading.
Because
his statement...
Well, he doesn't have a staff.
No.
I wouldn't think.
No, he does not.
Yeah.
He doesn't even have a person to show his statement to see if there are any typos in it.
No.
He issued a statement, which was kind of snippy and was sort of like, well, you didn't listen to me, so bye.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's filled with typos.
It's
hilarious.
Yeah.
But he basically talks about how the rent is still too damn high.
Yeah.
And no one is doing anything about it.
Yeah.
We got to get our shit together.
He said there are many questions the people should ask themselves. I wish them the best. I'm out. the whole thing was sort of like, look, I've been saying this
is
a problem.
I've been saying this, and you're not doing anything about it.
You're not doing anything, so I'm leaving. Deal with it.
Exactly.
It's basically what this statement was. So
I get
we'll miss him.
We'll miss him.
Yeah.
He was doing something.
Right.
For stuff, for an issue.
For entertainment. For an issue.
It was an important issue.
It was an important issue.
Those single issue candidacies, I think, it's like Occupy. They get maligned because he was never going to be elected. But he was a guy who made us talk about how the rent was too damn high. And you know what?
Even
it is too damn high.
Even in one of those debates, like sort of like Andrew famously Cuomo. Andrew Cuomo had to acknowledge him and agree with him that the rent was too damn high. Yeah. Did nothing about it once he got elected. But I mean,
but
like,
you're
forcing
the
people who are going to be governor on a debate stage to agree with you on a specific issue.
Those candidacies are 50% performance art, but 50% smart policy.
I agree.
Because someone had to talk about how the rent was too damn high and no one else was doing it.
Yeah.
And so Jimmy McMillan took one for the team.
We'll miss you.
We'll miss you, Jimmy McMillan.
Yeah.
In any case, People Magazine is doing some really hard-hitting reporting on the presidential campaign.
Yeah.
Because they this week asked campaigns what their favorite, or asked candidates what their favorite TV shows were.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a list that is both concerning, just because it's like seeing your teacher at the supermarket, or like it's like seeing the president with no clothes on. Like it's. Like, you don't want to know that these candidates enjoy mindless entertainment.
Right, are doing, yes.
But it's also sort of fascinating.
Right.
Hillary Clinton is more of a megalomaniac than we could have ever guessed, because her favorite is Madam Secretary. Mm-hmm. And we historically know that she had asked her staff, thanks to the email leaks, when Parks and Rec and Veep were on.
Yeah.
So she's obsessed. She only watches shows about that are inspired by her, basically.
Totally.
I mean, that's yeah. literally three shows that were inspired by her personally.
Yes.
She only likes to watch herself on television.
Totally.
Bernie
Sanders and Martin O'Malley both said Modern Family, which is
a solid choice.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Donald Trump
gave the most Donald Trump answer as you possibly could. He said, "My guilty pleasure TV show is SNL, starring me. They got great ratings, the best ratings in years. It was a terrific success. I enjoyed doing it." I mean, that is just a dream.
That's the most Donald Trump quote a person has ever
I think Ted Cruz had the most solid list, pending one garbage show that I would never watch.
Right.
But he said Criminal Minds, which is
the one I was talking
about. But then Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad, and Veep.
Veep is a real surprise.
That's a surprise.
That's a show for smart people that care about things, not a show for people that are evil.
I know, exactly.
But, I mean, maybe he identifies with what...
I feel like Jeb Bush's answer is, like, the story of his campaign.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Isn't it?
It's like...
Because his answer was Lilyhammer,
yes.
which is that show on Netflix about, like, some guy, some mobster
yeah.
who is, like, a witness, but then he has to relocate
to Lilyhammer. People have recommended
it to me. So, like, I'm sure it's fine, but it's, like, just
It's irrelevant.
It's the most irrelevant,
nondescript... It means nothing to anyone.
Like, everybody who saw that probably collectively went, huh?
Exactly.
Which is what's been happening to Jeb Bush's campaign...
The whole time.
...since he kicked it off.
Marco Rubio, Walking Dead... Boring choice.
Interesting. I mean, he probably was... he's going for an audience there, I think, probably.
Yeah.
But...
Chris Christie? Football Life.
Football Life.
Gross.
This is a docu-show on the NFL Network about former football players.
Right. That's horrible.
Whatever.
Fiorina, House of Cards.
That's not surprising.
No.
Yeah.
Mike Huckabee, Bill Maher.
Yes.
He
called that a guilty pleasure, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
But also... This is...
That's a bad answer, I think, actually.
I think it's a genius answer.
Really?
I think... That it shows him as layered in a way that his own brain rarely shows him as layered.
Yeah, that's true.
He comes across as a one-note idiot head.
Yeah.
And we know from historical, you know, from precedent that he's not. We know that he's a little bit more layered than he claims to be, because he's talked about populist economics in the past, and that's a weird fit for a guy like him. So we know he's layered, but you forget, because he says so many hateful things so often, and stupid things so often.
I agree with you on that front. Where I thought it was stupid was just in a GOP primary.
Well, yes.
But
right.
yes, I
but
agree.
It's in the GOP primaries, you don't want to look layered. But to a guy looking for an audience for his book deal.
Well, that's true.
You do.
Yeah.
And he's done it.
Or a guest appearance.
Let me tell you, what he's not going to do is win the presidential election. But what he is going to do is attempt to get a TV show again and also get a book deal.
Yeah.
And this is a smart choice for that campaign.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
No one asked Pataki. P.S. No.
No
one cared. No. It's almost Christmas.
Yeah.
The House and Senate are sort of struggling to get the last pieces of legislation through. We're trying to get the Zadroga bill passed, which again is going to come down to the wire, which is like, guys,
people,
get a fucking hold of yourselves.
Yeah.
It's too ridiculous at this point. Just pass the damn thing. No one loses from passing this. The Republicans don't lose from looking like they care about first responders. Like, sorry about it.
Yeah.
Another thing they're not doing, though, is passing any of the judicial, I mean, any of the nominations, not just judicial, but otherwise.
And there's a sort of important one
that Obama
right
has
now,
been
considering what's been going
every
on in the
January,
world recently.
Obama renominates, like, all of the people he's nominated for anything ever, because they never pass. Yeah, but there's an important one that is the Treasury Department's Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Crimes.
Right.
That's the person who tracks down and stops funds that go to terrorist organizations in the banking sector.
Yeah, we don't have one of those right now.
We don't have one of those right now, so No one is keeping an eye on that stuff.
And we're not going to do it because Christmas. Because
you got to get home for Christmas. Christmas is, you got to, doesn't, yeah. Terrorism doesn't matter when you're dealing with something as important as Christmas.
And they said that specifically. Yes. Like, we're not conjecturing that the reason that Sherrod they're not
Brown
doing it.
Sherrod Brown has brought a bunch of these up. He's on the banking committee. He's the top Democrat on the banking committee. So he brought a bunch of these up, including this guy's nomination. The guy has a name that has two consonants in a row. I'm not even going to, it's like, I think it's Zubin, but there's an S that, it starts with an S. So it's like, who knows? But Richard Shelby, who is the chair of that committee,
basically
said, we're not going to vote now. We're going home for Christmas.
Yeah.
He also said something along the lines of, I know he's eminently qualified, but I just, there's too much dissension.
Right. Like, there's too much Christmas travel.
There should, exactly. No one wants to deal with this when we're trying to book flights home. It is tough to get a flight home for Christmas, guys.
Yeah.
But so, you know, terrorism's not such a big deal when Christmas is on the line.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like we're fighting the war on Christmas against them by trying to make them vote on appointments that they should have voted on in January.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, there's been a sort of rash of hate crimes against Muslim Americans.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
Which... it's maybe something that we could have guessed given all of the rhetoric that's come out of the last few weeks.
Yeah.
But also,
don't
stop
be doing
it.
That.
Stop that.
Come on. God.
Hate crimes against anyone are a bad idea.
Right.
But they're especially not a good idea in when we're in a geopolitical, you know, struggle against a force that is using crimes like this to recruit
to
people.
To recruit people. Exactly.
Also, Muslims in America,
and they're going to recruit people domestically.
Yeah,
that's what we're coming off of.
Americans, so they don't need to be recruited for this sort of thing. They already are here being American. They
here.
Are like you, an American,
right.
Like all of us.
Yeah.
Like
when you firebomb an American mosque, you're basically
you're trying to kill Americans.
You're trying to kill Americans, and you're also you are radicalizing them
for no reason.
For no reason
at all.
Right.
Because we could just let them continue on going to mosque, just as I, a person who doesn't like anyone going to any house of worship, are letting people nationwide go to church and synagogue.
You let me go to church this morning.
I let Brent go to church this morning. Did I think that anyone should go to church this morning? No, of course not. But I wasn't going to stop Brent from going. I'm letting him live his life.
Yeah, you weren't going to firebomb it.
No, I'm just going to let him do that and know in my head that I disagreed with the decision. And that's how we all have to live sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like, it's too ridiculous.
Yeah, do better, America.
Do better.
Yeah.
One person specifically who should be doing better.
Oh my God!
Is Eric Erickson?
This is like the best.
The
story.
He's like a Fox talking head who's also a radio host who's just like a blowhard.
It's a conspiracy theorist.
It's a conspiracy theorist. Yeah.
Yeah.
This Monday, which was the 74th anniversary of Pearl Harbor, of the attack on Pearl Harbor, he tweeted, "Growing up, I remember my parents never letting us have Asian food on December 7th. They were children of World War II." Which Gawker saw and, like, lost their minds.
Yeah.
Because they went on, like, a week-long spree tracking down this story after he tweeted this. It's something that he said in the past as well. To explain why he's such a conspiracy theorist nutbag who also is sort of, like, vaguely okay with racist fear-mongering.
Yes.
He grew
up with it.
He grew up with racist fear-mongering. He can't help himself.
Yeah, it's in his blood.
Turns out there's a little bit of disagreement, however, within his own household about whether or not that's true. But whether or not they actually did boycott Asian food on December 7th.
Yeah.
Because Gawker called his mother. They tried to call his sister. His sister hung up on them, so they called his mother.
Yeah.
She said, I've never heard that before. So they read her the tweet that was from his own mouth, or his own fingers,
Twitter.
Or whatever, his own Twitter. And she said, whatever you heard, I think this is completely your idea. I have never heard that before. Somebody's making that up about my son. Himself, apparently.
Yeah.
But, it was especially weird anyway, because his mother
She
wasn't alive when Pearl Harbor happened.
His
dad was two. They weren't exactly people that were personally affected by Pearl Harbor. So Gawker asked her to clarify whether she considered them, her and her husband, children of World War II. And then the conversation got really weird. She said, in response, what do you think of Jesus Christ? So Gawker, the Gawker reporter replies, what do I think of Jesus Christ? He's obviously an important figure in Christian theology.
Good answer.
It's a good answer. I would have panicked if someone asked me that. So she replies, Jesus Christ is the Lord and Savior, Mr. Trotter. He is the King of Kings, and he is coming again. So I hope and pray that you are Christian, Mr. Trotter. I will add you to my prayer list. And then she hung up. So then they call her back to confirm that she is the correct Eric Erickson's mother.
I feel like that she just answered it, right?
But they wanted to get down to the source. She said, so then she says that she is, and then adds to the continuing ramble that is this conversation.
She gets back to the original question.
As far as Asian food, we love Asian food. As far as the Japanese bombing Pearl Harbor, I'm very grateful that many of the Japanese people became Christian. Mm. We know many people who are Japanese, and they are very nice people.
Oh.
Diplomatic answer.
Yeah.
So later, Erickson responds to the story on his Twitter, mm-hmm. where he argues that his mom simply doesn't remember that this was their tradition.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because in 2012, he posted a similar story, but he seemed to indicate that the tradition continued to this day,
yes.
and that it's his parents that encourage him to observe it. Like, they're yes. the ones who remind
they're
him not to eat Asian food on December 7th.
Yeah.
So Gawker emailed him to clarify what exactly the story was. And then he wrote this, like, long takedown in the Independent Journal Review's opinion section titled, 27 years later, my mother must answer for her crimes against humanity. Where he goes, it's like a long rambling takedown in which he talks about how his mother decided that their family should boycott Asian cuisine on December 7th one time in 1988. But every other year, his mom and dad both hold to the tradition of avoiding Japanese food for Pearl Harbor Day. But, like, goes on to be like, Gawker is forcing my mother to answer for the crime of blood. Like, it's like a crazy rambling. Gawker has a clip of it. It's a crazily so rambling good. Nonsense
God.
Thing. It's crazy.
God.
Guys, now two stories about how America is losing.
This is a pretty good one.
This is a pretty
this
good one.
Has so many things that I feel like just probably disgust you.
It's sum up why we're terrible
yeah.
as a nation, as a people.
Buffalo Wild Wings is a place that I've been to.
That I've never been to.
Uh-huh. I've watched sports.
Oh,
games
I bet you have.
There.
I yeah. bet you have.
Uh-huh. I've eaten the wings there.
I know.
They have invented a new food.
This they're, is
a
they're new famous thing. For their crazy
this,
flavors.
Yeah, this is a new thing with fast food restaurants. I actually listened to a really good This American Life
mm-hmm.
where the reporter sat in. One
oh,
of the rooms.
I listened to this one
yeah,
too.
Did you?
Yes.
Wasn't that
with
so
the
good?
Where they
were, yeah, the tasters for like
yes.
I can't remember who it was. Hardee's or something.
Yeah, I think it was Hardee's.
Right?
Yeah. It was one of those kind
oh,
of.
Oh, Hardee's and Carl's Jr., which is
yeah,
the same thing,
same people.
Basically. Yeah, and so they come up with all these. You know, that's where they come up with the. You know, KFC had the double down with the
yep.
bun is the pieces of fried
this
chicken.
Where they
or whatever.
Pitch all those crazy,
the crazy things.
Ideas.
Yeah, exactly. So, Buffalo Wild Wings has one, and it's a Mountain Dew plus. Well, it's a Mountain Dew flavored sauce.
Yes. It's a zesty citrus sauce, mm. which is a mix of Mountain Dew, lemongrass, ginger, soy sauce, and red peppers.
It sounds good short
minus
of the Mountain,
the Mountain Dew.
Dew. Yeah.
Once you don't have Mountain Dew in there, what you have is a decent sauce for a wing. It will be released on December 14th. That's tomorrow.
Anyway,
the very day this podcast
yeah,
is dropping.
That's right, yeah.
Dropping.
Yeah. But every time I read a story about this,
oh.
it really is just sort of like makes you think that it's like a sign of...
The end times.
Yes,
this
exactly.
This is what's going to bring about the
yeah.
end times.
Christians
Jewish people
think that it's
don't
the,
have to go
the
back
four
to
horsemen
Israel.
Or whatever, right? Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
There's no reason for Jews to all observe the Sabbath at the same time or whatever they're claiming the issue is. They don't have to all go back to Israel as Mike Huckabee is claiming. This is it.
Right.
We've already made it.
It's the Mountain Dew Buffalo Wild Wings.
It turns out that the aftermath of the end times is surprisingly like the foremath of the end times. It just involves us eating disgusting food concoctions. And one final thing.
Yeah.
Is a Huffington Post headline. I used to write a column for this blog that I used to keep called This Week in News According to Huffington Post.
That blog was really funny.
It really was. I know. I wish that I had kept the Huffington Post. I feel like I should start that one again because it was just a mix of all the crazy Huffington Post headlines that they post on their main page that have nothing to do with anything.
Right, because the whole thing with the Huffington Post, and you and I talk about this all the time,
you
click on Huffington Post to read the news
and
then inevitably...
And you end up clicking on Pippa Middleton's not wearing pants and it's like that she's wearing leggings or something. You know, like,
yes.
It's always something like that.
Yeah.
Or like when scientists had found slam dunk evidence of life on Mars and I had to question the repeated use of slam dunk in every headline that article had.
Yeah.
In any case, here's one that I think sort of tops them all. Left me with a lot of questions.
Yeah.
How this man survived being swallowed by a rogue hippo.
Not just any hippo.
I don't want to talk about rogue hippos.
No.
This implies that there are non-rogue hippos who are an organized hippo force who would never do such a thing as to swallow a man.
And how does
this
a hippo go rogue?
Was acting against hippo orders. Went after this man, despite the fact that his hippo kin had decided that wasn't the appropriate course of action.
The Sarah Palin of hippos.
It was the Sarah Palin of hippos. I love the idea of a hippo council in which hippos are deciding whether or not they are for swallowing men. And they decide
they're not, apparently.
And then one Ted Cruz hippo decides that he's going to swallow a man, like it or not, other hippos, and goes and swallows this weird-looking man.
He's very bizarre-looking.
Who it was on HuffPost Live, too, so it was a live interview. It wasn't even an article. But I love the idea of a rogue hippo has to make it into common parlance at some point. Because that's the best visual.
I agree.
Like a lumbering, rogue, giant animal that's just right. out there swallowing men, even though other hippos have decided that's not what they want to do. In any case,
oh, man.
We leave you with that visual. That's,
yeah.
that's the news for this week. We will be back next week with the news of next week.
Bingo.
And then it's Christmas, so that's exciting.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
God.
So we're going to do Christmassy things.
Yeah.
So we will be back next week. Mm-hmm. We will talk to you then.
Bye.
Bye.